Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today are...
I am John. I was on the first Zero episode.
I'm Andrew. I'll probably go by Delarat, and I have not been on before.
Cool. Well, the first episode was such a success when we finally finished it that we thought, why not go right into another one? So we've got a smaller group today. Hopefully we can do some more focused discussions. And yeah, let's see how it happens. Who's been watching something cool?
Not me. Actually, that's not true. I've been watching some Dragon Ball Z.
Wait. Like Kai or the like the old stuff?
Old stuff. I never watched it as a kid. I never liked it. I liked the original Dragon Ball. Never liked Z.
I have a friend who's that way too. Who's like Dragon Ball is funny and Dragon Ball Z is like jumping the shark.
Yeah.
So, but I've never seen it myself.
So I kind of decided I need to see it. You know, I have to.
You have a cultural debt.
I think I get it now. It is everything a JRPG is or an MMO is, but in an anime. It is, I'm going to fight this thing. I lost. Grind. Fight it again. I win. Next thing. It's pretty much that. And it's actually kind of enjoyable.
So for the people who are more in the know, like how far into it are you? Like all I know is like the Cell saga, the Boo saga. I've never seen it, so I'm just like faking.
I believe I'm near the end of the Frieza saga, which is fairly early. It's like episode 80 something.
Yeah, the Cell saga, which people often group together with the Android saga, which precedes it, is probably the longest. And then there's the Boo saga, and then it's over. But yeah, the Frieza saga is pretty early. So you're on planet Namek right now then.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite hobby is to make people explain the Dragon Ball Z plot to me, because even the best storytellers can't help sounding kind of, like, inane.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so there's androids from the dimension, and they invade, and then...
So the Dragon Ball Z plot is pretty easy. It's somebody threatens Earth, Goku tries to fight them, Goku's not strong enough, Goku trains and gets stronger, Goku defeats them. Repeat.
And sometimes he dies in there. Sometimes.
Yeah. But he's in the process of dying. He will defeat them, eventually. Or help somebody else defeat them.
But then he comes back. Cause like,
oh, yeah, he comes back.
They have halos eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes to the afterlife. Okay, so, the first thing that happens in Z is he dies, basically. And then he goes to the afterlife, trains there with King Kai, and then gets revived, and then comes back and fights the Saiyans. And then after that, they go to fight Frieza. Or they go to Planet Namek to wish some people back who were dead, who couldn't be revived by the Dragon Balls, because... The Earth Dragon Balls can only revive somebody once, but the Namekian Dragon Balls can revive somebody however many times they want.
And this has been Explaining Dragon Ball Z.
I could go on. I'm also watching Dragon Ball Z right now. The Kai version, though.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
But before that, I watched all of Dragon Ball. And in between, you know, breaks in between sagas or whatever, I also watched a decent number of the Dragon Ball Z movies, which are mostly garbage.
There's one where they fight Hitler, right?
No, that's not.
Yeah, there is.
No.
There is one where they fight Hitler.
What?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up. I'm looking it up right
it's
now.
It's like Kid Trunks or something. I have little pieces of spoilers from different things.
Oh, that must be one of the ones I haven't watched yet then. I'm on like movie 5 out of 20 something.
It's Fusion Reborn is the episode.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Wasn't the Red Ribbon Army pretty much a stand-in for like Nazis anyways?
Yes, basically.
So there's like double Nazis.
Also, I don't know why there's Hitler in this universe, because it's not Earth. Like, they call it Earth, but it's not not at all Earth. It's like everything is one country and there's a king of the world.
Well, it's alternate history.
Uh-huh.
Sure. So I guess after World War II is when things diverged and magic became real.
That's why Hitler lost, because magic became real. he was the one who knew, I guess. So just for the people who don't know, can you explain the difference between Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, and like Dragon Ball Kai?
Oh, and GT, right?
And GT.
Dragon Ball is the original story, and that follows mostly young Goku, and it's a lot more just like adventures, and it's a lot funnier. It's more, it has more gags. You know, Goku's like just insanely strong in that, and he trains on his own, like occasionally, but for the most part, he's just adventuring and like traveling around the world. His goal is to get stronger, and in order to do that, he just explores the world. Whereas in Dragon Ball Z, it's just like threat after threat after threat after threat.
Mm.
Instead of like finding the threats on his own, they just come to him over and over. And it's a lot less gag heavy. There's very few. Most of those are in the filler episodes.
As they do.
Yeah. And then in Dragon Ball Kai is just a remaster of Dragon Ball Z, which removes most of the filler, but is also still insanely slow in certain areas. Like, you know, the infamous charging up a Kamehameha for 5 episodes or whatever shit.
Yeah, do you think that the slowness is just is it a function of the work itself, or is it a function of the era it was made in? Like, if Dragon Ball were made now without any considerations of previous work, would it be a faster show, or is it just the nature of the source material is that it's going to be a slow show?
Well, you'll find out next season when Dragon Ball Super arrives.
Really?
Yeah, oh, they're making a new Dragon Ball.
Great!
I'm so excited.
Do you feel? You feel good about it?
Completely, legitimately excited. Yeah. Well, because
About anime. Excited about anime?
No.
Sorry. No, like, is it going to be a redo of the source material or something completely new with a new universe and new characters?
It's new. It's new. No. It's the same characters, just new content. So, I mean, there's all those Dragon Ball Z movies I mentioned earlier, and then there's also Dragon Ball GT, which was like a spinoff. Not a spinoff, it was a follow-up, but it was never official, I guess.
Like, not canon.
Like, you know, it's never Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, supported this. Like, he didn't. So they released that, like, they did that, and it was just, like, a cash-in. And apparently it's largely terrible. I haven't seen any of it.
Aren't all, like, G-something? Because the Yu-Gi-Oh's, like, GX or whatever is really terrible, too.
I don't know
too.
Anything about Yu-Gi-Oh.
Because they like, I'm going to show my, like, embarrassing, like, junior high kid watching Yu-Gi-Oh roots. Like, they tried to make Yu-Gi-Oh cooler by having all the card games take place, like, while they're riding motorcycles. And so they had, like, built-in, like, card tables on their motorcycles. And they'd be, like, racing, street racing. It's like Fast and Furious meets Yu-Gi-Oh.
Okay, but that sounds incredible.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I want to watch that.
I'd watch that.
Imagine like shoved into like the really terrible Shonen Grind thing, and so it's like, oh no, he's got a special motorcycle with 2 card tables. He can play like 2 people at once. I mean,
oh no, we're gonna have to take a pit stop. I gotta change a tire. Like,
no, like I can't even like it, it's just, it's so incoherent because it really is just like. It also might have been like to save like resources for animation because there's no backgrounds you have to draw. Just draw speed lines and shit. Yeah, just, oh, it's such a weird thing. And Yu-Gi-Oh already is so strange, especially if you saw it when it was like remastered into the US where they like removed death from the show and people are sent to the Shadow Realm instead.
Yeah.
And at one point, like they're doing like a duel to the death, except they've like changed the buzzsaw. It's going to cut someone's head off into an energy blade that will transport them to the Shadow Realm. And I'm embarrassed to admit that as a kid, I was not smart enough to realize that it was a buzzsaw. It's not an energy blade. It's a buzzsaw. It's going to cut off his head.
That's pretty great.
There's no Shadow Realm. Shadow Realm's death.
I like it. That's good.
Yeah. All right. So that's all you're watching, Delarot?
Other than that, I'm glad we talked a lot about that because the other thing I watched was Kekkai Sensen, but I've only watched the first episode, and I don't have a lot to say other than, like, I kind of left anime for a while. Mm-hmm. So this is actually me kind of coming back to it, other than movies. And it's just some of the incoherent stuff was getting on me. And Kekkai Sensen, episode 1 at least, pretty incoherent, I'm finding.
Mm.
I'm not a big action person either. Like, I like choreography, but not, like, explosions. So it's not doing a lot for me. I like some of the designs, though, like the aliens. Particularly, I mean, there's the guy getting like interviewed on TV, and he's got like kind of a squid head. But particularly, there was a guy with he actually reminds me of an action figure I had when I was a kid, and his arm is just like flesh grown over a gun, pretty much, and he shoots missiles out of it. And there's something about that that I really like. But otherwise, I'm gonna have to see how the rest of the series goes.
I've also watched that. Actually, I've been keeping up with it. There's a new episode today, which I haven't seen, but. Yeah, the creature design of that's pretty great. Like, I like the visuals a lot, and it's like, yeah, it's like a lot of otherworldly stuff. It's like less demonic and more just alien, which is really cool. Because even though they are technically from the other world or the underworld, I don't remember which they call it. But yeah, it's really cool. It's also very nice to watch, like, or very nice to look at. Like, the world design is cool, but I agree that the story's kind of incoherent. There are a few episodes that are really nice though, like. They sort of just like touch on the whole, you know, the common trope where you get like these otherworldly beings, and it's like the shtick is that humans are the real monsters, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh, yes. The King Kong Kong lesson.
Yeah, so they do that here, but I think it's handled a lot better because I don't know if I can really explain it. Like, it's not fresh on my mind, but
it works.
Yeah, it works. There are individual stories that are good, and then there is the overarching plot, which is much less interesting.
Yeah, this is a really good production pedigree. Like, the original story and character design are by Yasuhiro Naito, which is the creator of Incidentally Trigun.
Oh, is it really? Is he really on this?
Yeah, he created the original story, original character design, original creator. It's apparently based on a manga, looks like. And the character designer, and he looks like he's an animation director in a couple of the episodes, he did a character design and animation direction on Cowboy Bebop, on Golden Boy, on Full Metal Alchemist, on Wolf's Rain, Escaflowne. Yeah. Oh, Sword of the Stranger. He was a key animation and animation. Yeah, he's really experienced guy. Did a ton of Mobile Suit Gundam stuff, which I have absolutely no background for, whether or not that's impressive. But no, he's like, it makes sense that he looks like a real industry veteran. He looks like he's been doing stuff since for at least 2.5 decades. So yeah.
Yeah, like definitely the number one reason I am continuing to watch it is just because it's so nice to look at.
That's enough sometimes.
Yeah.
So what else are you watching, John?
Mostly just keeping up with other stuff.
Well, what's on the docket?
Let's see.
I've got stuff I want to talk about, but I'm watching a bunch of old stuff right now, except for when I watched Nozaki a few weeks ago. But
well, I watched an episode of Kuroko's Basketball today.
it's been how many 12 hours since you had Kuroko's Basketball? Yeah. We're all friends here. It's okay.
Yeah. The main character now is useless because the enemy team has somebody. I think. The captain of the enemy team, opposing team, whatever you want to call it right now, he put it as this is the upgraded version of Tetsuya, which is the main character, like Tetsuya Kuroko. So that's fun to watch because he's just like sitting on the bench now like, what do I do? I got to watch this and figure out what I do. And so the whole episode was that.
It sounds like shonen pacing. Yeah.
Yep. That's a sports anime. But this is particularly slow paced. Or especially slow paced compared to other sports anime that I watched, like Haikyuu, which was about volleyball or whatever. Kuroko's Basketball, probably the worst defender in recent times.
Or Chihiafuru.
Oh yeah, that one was pretty slow paced, but that one was a lot more
intellectual, yeah.
Intellectual and shoujo in its roots too. Like there was more than just the sport. It was about the characters as well. Which, I mean, not to say there's none of that in Kuroko's Basketball or other sports.
In Kuroko's Basketball, yeah.
Anyway, but it's much less important, I guess.
What would you suggest for someone who doesn't watch a lot of like sports anime? Like what would be like the one to get someone in that's like exciting?
Haikyuu. Haikyuu. Yeah. H-A-I-K-Y-U-U. Spelling out Japanese words is
yes
difficult.
The romanization of Japanese words. That's completely arbitrary sometimes. Yeah, I heard that Yawapeda also gets recommended a lot to me.
Yep, Yawapeda was really, really good and like tugged on the heartstrings a lot. But it's also long. Whereas Haikyuu, I think, is a more traditional 2-core, 24-25 episode thing. There are shorter ones, I think, but I can't remember any off the top of my head. But that's probably my favorite in recent years was Haikyuu.
It's worth noting that if you don't really think that you're into sports anime, that we mentioned Chihiafuru. Because that is so like it's a sports anime, but it's also built around characters. So if you're the kind of person who's not innate, who doesn't see innate drama in like sports or the exercise of like really exceptional skills, then like the characters will pull you in, and the show teaches you the sport and gets you invested that way. And it's not like, I mean, I liked it a lot. It's not the perfect sports anime, but definitely is a good like entry drug to something that's more entirely focused on the sport itself.
Yeah, I can agree with that. However, that is 52 episodes in total, so...
Yes, and people are mad that there's not going to be a third season, because I think the manga stopped being made, and...
Oh, really?
We talked about that last episode, like, the manga's in a slow point, and they're like, they took a hiatus, and so, that's gone.
Yeah.
And apparently wasn't that successful in Japan either. Yeah. another good one, Cross Game. If you like that creator, I forget what his name is, but he's been an institution since the 80s.
I'm not familiar with Cross Game.
So what sport is Cross Game?
Cross Game is a baseball anime. Kodachi. Someone Kodachi. I forget what his name is. It's basically about someone trying to get to Koshin. It's a baseball anime, but it's more about like these two people, this boy and this girl who the girl's the sister of this girl who died, and the boy was like her best friend / boyfriendish thing. So they like both are into baseball for different reasons, and they both have a connection to this person for different reasons. It's kind of, again, it's much more character driven about like why do they play baseball and what does baseball serve in their life. and how baseball maybe replaces something that they can't get back, like a person who's deceased. But it's also really good. The first baseball game in the game is played from like episode 6 to episode 10. And I remember I actually had a class to teach the next morning when I started episode 6. And I stayed up till like 3 in the morning because I just couldn't stop watching it, because it's just a perfectly engineered baseball game. So it just definitely turns the sport into a drama.
Yeah.
With like stakes and stuff. And the guy's name is Adachi Mitsuru, who he's basically been making sports anime since the early 80s, or sports manga since the early 80s. And this is one of his most popular ones to get adapted.
Do you know what else he's done?
Give me a second. you'd know him if you saw him, because all his characters look exactly the same. That's actually the biggest thing. He did Touch, the huge long Touch series, Nine, Idle Ace, Miyuki, H2. These are like all really big sports animes.
How appropriate, because I recognize none of them as the resident sports anime fan.
Yes, Idol A, Kats Little Boy. Nine's his big one, because I think it's a track star who starts doing it. Short Program, Cute. They all sound like nothing, because Japanese, especially if they're English Japanese titles, they sound like nothing.
Yeah.
Heart No Ace is a big one. I don't know. I'm out. It's the kind of thing where you don't know about him until you know about him, and then you're just kind of aware of him, because like he's got a very distinctive art style where like they have actually kind of similar faces, but they're eventually you get inured to kind of give a charm of the characters. That's also 50 episodes though, but you don't really notice it going by anyway. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 50 episodes seems like a lot, but that's for an anime, for anything really, that's not that bad. Like, I would consider...
I mean, it is 50 episodes of 22 minutes of actual content, usually, so yeah. it's not an hour long.
It's not like catching up on The Walking Dead or something.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you look at a typical TV show, and if they end after a couple seasons, that's, like, a huge disappointment. Whereas, I guess the Japanese kind of plan it a little more to be like, no, this is the full product, whereas here it's kind
of... I think most other countries do that. Like, the UK definitely does that with a lot of their television series, and like...
Yeah, it's just America that's like, no, run it to the ground.
Yeah,
it's
only the US, really.
Yeah, it's like you pitch a show, and then you just see where it goes from there, rather than planning it out, and yeah, kind of a disappointment with a lot of TV shows.
I think both are interesting directions. I mean, you're going to probably end up with a better product if you've figured the whole thing out beforehand, but I think some interesting things can come from just being like, let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
Like, let's see what happens when we don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm going to go ahead and, like, I tend to watch a lot of TV, too, and, like, I was really into Sons of Anarchy, and I was really frustrated when they basically resolved all the major plot threads at the end of season 5, but they had a 7-season contract, so, like, someone just does something incredibly stupid in the last 5 minutes of the season 5 finale, and that's when I stopped watching that show. But it could have gone a different way, and it could have... But it's so hard to know whether or not, like, the audience is going to...
Could have just been done.
Yeah, it's been done, but, like, sometimes, like, surprise, the show's not over is great, and sometimes surprise, the show's not over is like, fuck you, show, I want you to be over.
But, you know, sometimes a car wreck can be interesting. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have my shelf is full of anime and TV shows that I own, because, like, they totally come apart. Like, I think Scrapped Princess is one that I own because it's, like... weirdly imperfect in a really fascinating way, because it's like this fantasy anime, but it's also like set inside of like a sci-fi terrarium, and there's like at one point like the character gets amnesia for like 5 episodes. It's almost blatantly as padding. It's a really, but I mean, I like it a lot, and it's one of it's a really unique anime. It's a really unique anime, so it's always funny to see how that stuff plays out.
Mm-hmm. I just want to go back to Chihayafuru because we said it's a sports anime, but it's completely different, because it's structured very similarly, but the actual sport is not a typical sport. It is a competitive card slapping game.
Explain what it is. It's this really weird Japanese game where someone reads out the first half of a poem and you have to slap a card with the second half of the poem on it.
Yeah, it's a competitive card slapping game. it basically, yeah, they just read out a poem and like it's memorization and reflexes, but it's not your typical, like, it's not baseball, it's not basketball, it's not anything like that.
No,
it's also one-on-one. Well, I mean, they have team battles, but it's one-on-one.
They have team battles, but it's elimination, so yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I figured I'd throw that out there. In case that makes it more interesting to people, because it did to me.
Yeah, it's so different, and the show teaches you what the game is like really well, so that after I finished watching it, they on YouTube they have like an 8-hour video of like 2 years ago the Queen Championship, and you can see that, and you can like, oh, you can you, like the show's taught you like their different play styles, so, like it does in like educate you on the way that you play Karuta competitively, but it also is just like I tell people about it and they're like, oh, card slapping game, oh, like
that's cute,
like BS or yeah, exactly. Egyptian rat's ass or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I mean, no, but
kind of.
I mean, you can make a sports anime about that, and that'd be pretty crazy too.
It would be
less weird than some sports animes that have been made.
Definitely,
but yeah, that's definitely an institution. Well, I have been watching. I promised last episode that I'd talk about Pat Labor, but I really don't have anything to say about Pat Labor except it's maybe 20 episodes too long, and it's the blurb is Ghost in the Shell but with more actual ghosts is kind of Pat Labor. There is like,
oh, so it's a cyberpunk thingy.
Yeah, it's kind of cyberpunk. It's more like near future, like if robotics become really a really profitable field, so like everyone's using robots for everything, but especially like large mecha sized robots. But it's definitely got a vague like procedural. You're with a police unit and you know all the people and you watch them like solve crimes and stuff. And the main difference between it and Ghost in the Shell is instead of philosophy, there's lots of Scooby-Doo type stories where like there's a ghost haunting the local shrine. Send the Pat Labors out to check it out. Oh, it's just a labor. It's always a labor. Spoiler.
What is a labor?
It's always a labor is what they call mechas. Like, oh. It's always just like, oh, some guy's like walking around in a big giant stompy robot at night and people thought it was a ghost.
That sounds unrealistic.
Terrible.
Yeah, like in terms of expectations of people, if they know that these giant robots exist and it's happened, why do they all think it's ghosts?
I mean, the thing I always like about Ghost in the Shell is the standalone complex. The movies don't really have that as much. It's just how examined like the place of cybernetics in society is, and Pat Labor's definitely earlier on that evolution where sometimes it's got really interesting ideas about like, well, if 40 feet tall robots became really common, how would society change? How would businesses change? How would the way that we live our life change? And then sometimes it's just completely like unexamined because they want to do this goofy thing where like there's like a weird like dude who's become king of the sewers by like customizing his labor to like fit in a sewer, and so he just like goes around murdering people. Although not never technically murdering people, like maiming them horribly but leaving them alive. But like the meta plot of the series is about like they get this really nice labor that's this really nice mech that's like at the top of the world's game. Like it's the best one in the world, and there's a big question about it's so expensive, is it worth it to bring the rest of the department up to those labors or to find a different one that everyone can have that's cheaper to operate? And that's a for me, because I'm a deeply boring person, that's a really cool like question for it to have. It's like questions of police procedure and stuff like that. But no, the ghost stories definitely had me so sick of it by about 30 episodes in.
So when you say ghosts in this, do you mean like Ghost in the Shell ghosts or like actual ghosts?
No, I never mean Ghost in the Shell ghosts. I always mean like there was, I would say that out of 47 episodes, I would say 12 or 13 involve ghosts that they inexplicably send, like spirits from another realm.
So okay. I was just making sure, like, because when you compared it to Ghost in the Shell and said ghosts, I wasn't sure at first, and then you started talking about mechs, and I was like, maybe the mechs are being controlled by ghosts, like Ghost in the Shell, but no.
There's one episode about that. It's okay. Really terrible. But no, it's like, I'd really recommend, like, there's the OVAs and the movies, and those are really good because they're super focused, and it's just, it sounds like they took a bunch of leftover ideas from the OVA and then like, oh, we can pad this out with like, I just saw this American cartoon called Scooby-Doo. It's really funny. And like, what if it was Scooby-Doo with giant robots, which honestly about a full like quarter of Pat Labor is Scooby-Doo with giant robots. But I enjoyed it. And it's cool because like, this is maybe inane to say, but I think it's worth pointing out. It's got pretty good gender politics. Like half the crew is women, and like, there's competent women and incompetent women. There's competent men and incompetent men. I think that's maybe just how like Japan does the police drama, where they don't really have the like policing is a man's job as much. But it's still like it's fun to watch, and I'd recommend the original OVAs and the new OVAs a lot. It's just the TV show It's not worth 47 episodes.
Did you watch the original movie?
I watched the first movie. The second one's the one that's directed by Mamoru Oshii, and so of course it's fetishized, like all of his work is fetishized. Urusei Yatsura, Beautiful Dreamer, the Ghost in the Shell movies. The movie's good. It's about someone building an arcology out in the ocean, and someone tries to sabotage it, and like it's kind of a Die Hardish siege thing where like surviving in this building where there's no support, no access, and it's completely locked down. So, but you're in a giant robot because it's Pat Laver.
Yeah, I think I saw the original movie like way back when I was little. It was like one of the first things I saw. I was always fascinated by the fact that they were mechs with like giant handguns with giant bullets.
Yeah.
Not lasers or anything. It's just like, no, I gotta like roll the barrel out on my six shooter and see how many bullets I have left with my mech. Like,
yeah, it's definitely a very, it feels very like the old Gundam school of design where like the satisfaction is seeing like giant robots interact with objects. And so you can't have a built-in gun. That's boring. You have to have, they have to have weapons that they can hold and stuff so that you can have that combining feel of like the giant robot, a machine grabs with a machine and the machine works a machine. And it's kind of this techno fetishism angle. There's a point later on where they make a giant robot shotgun. It's like, it's so hard not to bash it because it's goofy and it's dated, but it's also like,
I actually kind of like that idea in that the natural progression of building a giant robot suit is then to build a giant gun that you can use that you wouldn't be able to use as a normal human.
It's like a battleship gun, and there's one point where the robot's damaged and they have to build this like machine. They use a car to like support the revolver, and they'd like tie the revolver onto the gun. It's like a one-shot thing because the gun will destroy the car when it fires because it's got so much recoil that only a robot could handle. But like I said, it's really hard not to like sound like I'm making fun of it because it is dated, and it does like, it's hung up in a lot of very, very mid-80s ideas of what technology is. At the end of every episode, it says, this story is fiction, but in 10 years, who knows, is literally what it says at the end, which feels really depressing because, like, there were no giant robots in 10 years. In 10 years, we make animes about giant robots who are secretly dead moms, but it's still just fantasy. But it's hard not to make fun of it, but it is really ahead of its time in some ways. But you get all of that in the movies and the OVAs, which are only 8-9 episodes long, so I'd recommend those instead, even though I was doing it kind of as a history project. And speaking of history projects, the other thing I'm watching is Crest of the Stars, which I haven't seen enough of to say much about, but it's like super good space opera, which I don't really expect from Japan, because when they do space opera, it tends to be something like Martian Successor Nadesco or Van Dredd, where it's all about like the dynamics of the crew and the Galactic Crisis serves as context. This is more about, you know, burgeoning war, and there's like a small love story, but it's just as much about the type of societies that would exist in the far distant future. Nice. I'd recommend that. I'm only 6 episodes in, but
I think
it's mostly just been, oh, go ahead.
No, sorry. The only anime space opera I've seen is The Irresponsible Captain Tyler, which is sort of a goofy take on it, but also I think it's a pretty good take on it. Like, it's just this incompetent guy who's maybe not incompetent, he just doesn't care. And he just gets involved in this like galactic war, and it just goes places. And it's pretty good. It's also long though.
Well, they all are back then. Yeah, yeah. I saw Glass Fleet is the closest thing that I've seen to like a really traditional space opera in anime. And it's super terrible because it's just basically like, you know how for like Japanese fantasy anime, like that takes place in the West, like medieval type stuff, castles, sure, and knights.
Yeah.
They have this really weird kind of static idea of like how feudal politics looks, and Glass Fleet is just that transposed. It's taking place in spaceships instead of inside a castle, and it doesn't really play. It's super slow, so slow. Glass Fleet's very appropriate because it's very hard and still and cold as an anime. But speaking of irresponsible guys who might seemingly be incompetent, but might actually save the day, do you want to take a break and then we can talk about Trigun Badlands Rumble?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Right now we're going to start talking about our anime of the episode, which in this case is Trigun Badlands Rumble, a anime movie directed by Nishimura Satoshi in 2010. It is a continuation, actually a kind of a lost episode of the Trigun anime series, in which case Bash the Stampede, our intrepid hero and wanted man, tries to stop a notorious robber from destroying a town. Is that a good synopsis? I mean,
that about sums it up, yeah.
And not much happens in that anime, so I'm tipping my hand. I'm sorry.
No, it doesn't.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot of opinions, Delarot, so you should go first. Tell us your history with Trigun, or your lack of history with it.
So my history with Trigun is friends telling me they like it a lot. They seem to really like the characters. I've seen plenty of cosplays. I had a friend who cosplayed Vash, and that's my connection to Trigun.
I've cosplayed Wolfwood, so okay. Yeah, I mean, it was a popular thing in like 2002, 2003 to be like those guys.
I'll start with some good. The character designs are really nice.
Yeah.
They have really interesting outfits. Like, every piece of them is pretty interesting.
Like, yeah, I was actually going to bring that up too. Like, even the pointless side characters, yeah. Like, you just yes. see for like a few frames, they have amazing character design. Like, there's one guy at one point that like looks like a giant cannonball.
Yes.
Like, when Gasback is walking into the mansion, and he just runs out like panicking, and then his arms shoot out, and then he fires his fist into the air. It was so great. I had no idea what his purpose was, but it was incredible. It was like 10 seconds, 10 seconds of nonsense. And I loved it.
It made me think Mega Man immediately. Like, he's Bomb Man.
Yeah, he definitely like could have come from one of those games.
I mean, what I feel like is the main antagonists in the anime are these gung-ho guns, or these like custom built human weapons. And I think that he kind of extrapolates that back into like everybody in this planet is like. Yeah. Like, how can I make myself more lethal?
Yeah.
Except for the insurance girls, who are apparently sane, but everyone else is just like, so I have a gun, but is a gun enough? Maybe if like the rest of me was a gun too, or something.
Yes.
But that's what I love about the creator Yasuhiro Naitao, because almost all that comes from him. The director Nishimura Satoshi is good at just like executing stuff, but I think it's really Naitao who's just got this really great sense of like. It's not steampunk, it's not cyberpunk, it's not even, like, rustpunk. It's this weird sort of, like, what if the Wild West lasted forever
sort of
look. And it's so unique, and that's kind of what draws people to Trigun, is because there's nothing that looks like it. And it's kind of funny that, like, of the big three, circa 2000s, Shonen, Seinen, like, breakouts, which are Cowboy Bebop, Outlaw Star, and Trigun, I think Trigun has, like, the most unique visual design. And I kind of like the soundtrack, too.
Oh, yes.
It's not as much a display in the... movie as in the TV series, but
it's definitely true.
Very
yeah.
Western slide guitar and really good atmosphere. Like it's got, you're right, Delarat, it's got atmosphere bleeding out of its characters and out of its settings. And the fact that it's just because it's a side story, it's willing to let you see like, oh, here's the plant. We're not even going to tell you what a plant is. That's a huge thing in the anime, but in the show, it's just like, oh, it's a big freaking yeah. light bulb that powers all the town stuff.
Which, by the way, I love that design too. It's just, it's ridiculous, it's great, yeah. but it's great.
Before we leave the Bomb Man, so there. This is no.
Back to the Bomb Man.
He was seriously one of my favorite things. I when I realized what was. I actually went back and watched it like two times.
God, I want to see it now. I didn't even notice it. I'm sad.
So here's the thing. It's not actually about him, but they do another similar thing to that. There's a part where it's just like a couple of guards like standing outside a building or something. I can't remember. It was just a scene change. But one of the guys puts his arms behind his head, and then for like. 1 second before the scene changes, he starts doing pelvic thrusts. He just starts doing that. And I had to rewind. I was like, did I just see that? Did anyone else see this?
I missed
like,
that one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always stuff going on. Like in the bar scene, which is possibly my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh, it's definitely a good bar fight. Yeah. It's good old Western bar fight. I hope you're going to mention what I'm going to mention about that, because it was great.
I'm sure we will, but let's leave our listeners in suspense. That like just like you see the bar and like in the background there's always stuff going on, and there's no, it's so interesting to see, because Trigun had like big budget problems. Episode 15 or 16, the third moon incident, I think it's called, or the second moon incident. It's been 5 years since I've seen Trigun, so I don't remember, but like there's a big thing that happens and they just blatantly run out of money in this incredibly complex episode. Yeah. And there's just like lip flaps and like just like flashing stuff because they have no money and they've got like 15 more minutes of the episode to do. And so it's interesting to see if this crew, except for the scriptwriter, and that's something I'll get into later, but if this crew just has like infinite money, who knows where it came from. This project was started in 2005, so it took took a half a decade to make this movie, but they have so much money and they put it all into like making this world just incredibly living. And every single scene, there's always something going on in the background, except for the like final fight. And that's really impressive. And I'm going to be positive about that because that is super duper impressive.
Yeah, definitely good. I just want to mention one thing that happened during the bar fight, which made me laugh for the rest of the bar fight. At one point, there's a guy on the ground and there's a guy above him just kicking him in the nuts over and over. Yes. And then this other guy runs up, punches the guy doing the kicking, and then proceeds to kick the guy in the nuts some more. Just takes over, like, I got this, get away from me.
These are my nuts.
Just starts stomping on his nuts over and over and over.
Yeah, I remember that. And the moment you say it, I remember that really vividly. But yeah, the bar fight is so live and interesting. And it kind of, and even most of my, I'm going to go ahead and tip my hand now because why not? We've been talking about this for like 5 minutes. Most of what I dislike about the movie is how it completely like messes with Vash's character and makes him a lot more like whiny and pathetic, as opposed to someone who's just willing to do anything to get what he wants. And what he wants is always that no one dies. Like, that's Vash's thing, is that like, it's not about saving the most lives, it's about saving every life. And they mostly preserve that, but Vash is much more whiny and pathetic. And I think the closest he got to his original TV show character is when he just goes through and takes the bullets out of everyone's gun.
That was really good.
Yeah. And then immediately gets caught, and everyone's just like charging him, like, give me your bullets!
Okay, so as someone who hasn't really watched Trigun, I absolutely despised Vash's character. I didn't understand why he was the protagonist, because... Oh, okay, so, man, where do I start? Yeah, the bumbling idiot thing, it's an anime thing. I could excuse it to some extent. I'm not a big fan of the, like, Batman, like, I gotta do this without anyone getting hurt thing. Because most of his actions, or inaction rather, like, led to a lot more pain than that one person dying.
Yes.
But the thing that gets me is he deals with the would-be rapists, and then he proceeds to just consistently sexually harass Amelia and, like, stalk her.
Yes.
And it's all like, oh, it's all jokes, it's all jokes. It's like, no, actually, you're just as bad as them. You are the equivalent of the nut-kicking guy, but for rape. You are like, no, stop raping. It's my rape. And it's just like, I don't like
that. Yeah, I mean, this is my complaint, because the TV show was written by this incredibly experienced writer, Kuroda Yosuke, who wrote almost all the Tetsu Munyo stuff, Gundam 00. He wrote like all, he's basically this incredibly experienced and I think like a really talented staff writer. And he's not even remotely involved in this movie. They got this woman who the closest thing she has to a background in this sort of stuff is she wrote Casher and Sins, which is not very good, and Death Note, which is good but not particularly actiony. And so
I actually just want to jump. I actually liked Casher and Sins, although I don't know if I would now. I liked it. I don't know. I watched it like 10 years ago.
Isn't that the worst? Where you're like a former version of me really liked this anime.
Yeah, I don't know if it's terrible. It could be. There's a lot of stuff that I've rewatched, and I'm like, what am I doing in my life?
Like she has a lot of. She worked on Witchblade, I think, is like maybe the closest analog to Trigun. I don't think she gets Vash, because the thing is, like, Vash always had something else going on. So the reason that he pretends to be a womanizer who like clings to women is because usually he's making excuses for him to always be around them to like beat up other dudes, but he never, like, he is given repeated chances in the anime to actually consummate something with a woman, and he never takes it. He doesn't actually want to get with these women. He's just trying to come up with plausible excuses to be around them in case someone tries to hurt them. And this is something that the anime doesn't seem to understand. It's the same way that, like, he pretends to be a bumbling idiot if he thinks that a bumbling idiot will accomplish his things. But for some reason in the script, Vash is just a bumbling idiot by default. And it's not just that, like, Vash's character is that at the beginning of his life, and he's effectively immortal. And so he's seen this planet grow over hundreds of years, but he made a promise to someone at the very beginning of this, of the world, never to let a single person get hurt. And he was a child when he made that promise. And so, like, he's got this very childlike belief that, like, the promise must be interpreted literally. I can never let anyone be hurt. Even the worst people in the world deserve to live. And so the anime is kind of about what kind of person could even start to keep that promise, and what kind of physical and mental toll would it take on him. And granted, it doesn't always pull that off really well. I think it kind of pulls back at some points, especially when it turns out that Vash, spoilers a little bit, but whatever. It's been like 15 years. But Vash has a brother who thinks that Vash's promise is bullshit, and so he basically constructs like an elaborate scheme, conspiracy full of dozens of people, to make Vash break his promise and to make Vash not only let someone be hurt, but to hurt someone himself. When you see that happen, like, that's super important, and it doesn't seem like the movie knows this at all. It's like they didn't even watch the show, which makes me sound like an angry nerd rage dude when I say that, but I'm super baffled at why did this get made? And people are so excited that it got made because Trigun was a huge failure in Japan, and it was basically thrown in a dumpster in the U.S. The rights were sold for something like $30,000, and they made back like 20 times that or something. It was a huge hit in the U.S., and just like with Cowboy Bebop, the success in the U.S. made it more popular in Japan. But the fact that this movie got made was just came out of nowhere, and people were so surprised and happy. And then to make it a show that's not even really about Vash, it's about this girl and her like douchebag dad, who is super obsessed with like taking and giving stuff. Which I don't know. Yeah. I need to stop talking, but I could go on for a long time.
Speaking of like that twist, like I didn't see it coming, but it wasn't necessarily like good.
Which twist? The fact that he's her father?
Yeah.
The Star Wars, as we call it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. It didn't do, because why did I care about her character? Why did I care about him? Like, I didn't care about anyone in that movie except for Bomb Guy.
Bomb Guy, yeah.
So, I mean, I like the insurance girls. I thought the insurance girls were actually the closest they came to, like, their original TV show character, where their job, they're insurance salesmen in a world where there's people like Bomb Guy.
Yeah.
And, like, just the fact that, like, one of them's just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, whatever. We're doing our best. Another girl's like, no, I'm going to lose my job. Like, that's funny. It worked for me. But maybe because I was prepped by the anime to like their characters.
Yeah, you kind of have background information. Like, I feel like that's the same way with Vash. Like, if you went in knowing that sometimes he was this bumbling idiot, you can look at it and go, oh, I see they're emphasizing this part of his character or something. But to me, it's just like, wow, like that's all this character is, and it's hard.
Yeah, like in the anime, sometimes Vash acts like a bad guy because he knows that's what he'll be like. Oh, I'm Vash the Stampede. I'm the murderer of thousands. I'm the $60 billion double dollar man. Fear me. Get out of here. And he like uses it to his advantage. But like he's a lot more. Everyone's a lot more one note. Even Wolfwood's more one note, and Wolfwood's already pretty one note in the anime.
Yeah, he is.
He's kind of like, I'm a hypocritical preacher.
They basically like repeat the Wolfwood introduction where he's just like dying of thirst, and then somebody comes along and saves him, and then he follows them around for a while.
A lot of this stuff is recycled because Gasback, who I liked a lot more before we had the official translation, and all the fan subbers thought his name was Gasbag. but Gasback is basically Brilliant Dynamite's Neon from the Steamer Hijack arc.
Yeah,
like they're
right.
They're the same character. Like, it's really odd that there's so much that's just tantalizing in the anime that's kind of just like left aside to make this pretty stock story. I kind of liked it being like on a base level being a plot about robbers that screw over their boss, and then he's coming for them 20 years later with like a plan.
See, that's one of the few things I think the revenge angle is just I couldn't care less about that. I liked watching Gasback. I liked his attitude a lot. I liked the character of Gasback. I did not like the revenge angle at all. I felt that was just like overplayed and boring. I don't know. I mean, it didn't really. It wasn't a negative.
I mean, you liked this. So like, tell me what you liked about it, because I've actually got like I have my phone here and I just was texting myself angry texts about about this.
Okay, so.
So yeah, no, just like what works for you? Like what about this works? Because you actually have problems with the anime, don't you?
Yeah, so I'll get into that. So as far as Trigun the series goes, I am a much bigger fan of like the first half, where Vash is just sort of a wanderer and he is a superhuman. You kind of figure that out quickly, that he's just like really powerful, and he just kind of gets involved with these little pockets of civilization like throughout this desert wasteland planet. And then halfway through the series, it starts dumping the gung-ho guns on you. I mean, so I've seen Trigun twice. The first time, I probably loved it because I was in high school. This time, which was like, I guess it was a few months ago, actually.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was much more enamored with the super powerful guy who just gets involved with little pox civilization with their own little problems and whatever, than I am with this super serious, doesn't really seem to have earned it quite yet, gung-ho guns storyline that just takes over the show basically in its entirety, except for like a few one-off episodes. It does eventually earn it earn my trust back, like, in the last few episodes. Because Bash's arc is a good arc, but it takes so long to get there, and it's so slow, and so just over and over the same thing. Like, one by one, these guys come to him.
Yeah, can I like, quickly interject, like, with my own commentaries? I think that I honestly, just me, I blame the first half of the show for not putting the stakes to earn it. It's two different shows joined together, and yes, there's not much effort to connect them. And so I think, like, you blame the second half for the first half, and I blame the first half for the second half, for like the failings of the second half, if that makes sense.
No, I completely understand, and I also agree. But then I've always been a fan of, like, this idea. I think I even mentioned it in the last episode we recorded, of just like a one-off thing. Like, I like the idea of a superhuman who intentionally avoids using all of his power because he knows that could just destroy everything. Like, I like that idea. I like that trope. Like, I guess it's sort of a Superman thing, but
yeah, but Vash is so much more psychologically interesting than Superman.
Yes.
Is even his, like, bastardized Badlands Rumble persona is more interesting.
Right,
than
I don't think Superman's interesting, but I like the idea of Superman, if that makes sense.
What if Superman was a pathetic pervert, though?
What if? And actually, that's the other big complaint. So I had two complaints. One was the revenge angle, and the other one was, like, I think I even wrote down in my notes, like, they turned the womanizing up to 11, and it's just completely unnecessary. Like, that doesn't need to exist.
It's really odd that the script came from a woman, too, while, like, the anime came from a dude who wrote all the scripts for the show. But that bit, maybe there's no correlation there. But you'd think that someone would be like, you know what's the worst part about Vash's character is his, like, kind of gross hitting on people. But instead, that's heightened in the movie, and I have no idea why.
I mean,
it's funny a little bit, but not really.
In Japan, do they get the same problems that, like, we get over in North America of just, like, you know, producers coming in and being like, you need more of this, sex this up, you know, like, is there any of that?
I don't know. I mean,
mostly speak from like, watching Shirobako and talking and, like, reading interviews with stuff. And yes, generally, although, like, it's more that the script writer basically comes in every week or so and just says what they're writing, and based on their gut reactions to, like, that synopsis, like, oh, make sure you emphasize this angle. So it's fully possible that one of the producers or someone in the production committee even was just like, you know what part of Trigun that I really liked that they never gave enough attention to was when Vash just wouldn't leave a lady alone. That was really great.
Yeah.
But it doesn't even feel like that because, like, they seem to know that it's an act because he drops it when she's leaving town. And she's like, whoa, where's the sleaze? And, like,
yeah, but the act doesn't serve any purpose. That's the problem. Like, like you mentioned earlier, it always serves a purpose in the actual anime, like in the actual series.
Like, he finds out that she's, like, literally allergic to dudes, which is a weird thing that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
And, like, Vash, you're not supposed to hurt people. So, like, if you give her hives by touching her, why'd you take off her boot and rub her foot?
Yeah.
Like, on a completely surface level, that was a really funny, like quick scene. And, like, I laughed pretty hard, but then I was like super gross and I felt gross with myself and gross with the show.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was where I almost yelled at the screen because I was just like, oh, he's being creepy, and then he did that and I was like, what are you doing?
I don't like what they did to Vash either. I think that was just like they took all of his goofiest and most out of character aspects and just dialed up to 11 for no reason other than gags, which I like gags, but I think that it doesn't fit his character to just be a gag for gag's sake. But going back to what I said earlier about me liking the first half more, I think that this episode fits in a lot, or this movie fits in a lot more with the first half of Trigun than it does with the second half. Just in terms of, like, it's a side story. It's not about Vash so much as it is Vash involving himself in the problems of other people. And it can lead to good or bad things, as you see, like him refusing to stop gas back.
I've done it. I've incepted you.
Awesome.
Him refusing to stop him obviously led to bad things, and you know that sort of comes up in the series too. But
yeah, but okay, like I hate how I'm so negative about this, but like what the show was always intent to prove is that like, pacifism has to be an end to itself because you can't expect to be thanked and you can't expect to like get anything out of that. And so the revelation at the end that like Amelia wouldn't have existed if he hadn't saved Gasback was annoying to me because it gives Vash a reward for not killing Gasback. And like, I think a big thesis of the anime is that pacifism is a really hateable philosophy if you live in a violent society. And so this idea that, like, oh, well, you made this, like, beautiful, determined, strong woman happen because you didn't murder an evil dude. Like,
I didn't read it that way at all. I read it just as, like, that was why he never, like, he didn't want to defend himself to her, but he accepted that that was a thing. And, like, you know, I don't think that it was, it didn't come off to me as him being rewarded for not killing Gasbeck. It came off as him acknowledging that fact and not wanting to, like, ruin her life, I guess, by telling her that fact. If that made sense.
That's interesting. That's an interesting interpretation. I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it as, like, the movie encourages us to be really frustrated with Vash that he didn't kill Gasback. And so I thought that the little line was the tension release of, like, oh, you shouldn't be frustrated because, like, he's responsible for something. But if you think of it as, like, oh, and she'll never know that I'm responsible for, like, her having a life. Like, I see it that way. I don't know if that's the dominant interpretation in my head, but it's interesting. Certainly.
Yeah, I guess I just see it more as character development for her, even if she doesn't know it, than it is as character development for Vash.
I saw it as an excuse as well, but, like, I can't sit there and not just think, like, yeah, but there's probably lots of strong and nice people that got murdered.
Murdered by Gasbeck, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's that old trope of one versus a million or whatever.
Yeah,
like, yeah. I mean, I like Trigun, and even though, like, it was literally the first anime I ever watched as an anime back in, like, 2003, so 12 years ago. Like, I really appreciate it for being, like, do you let a train hit four people or hit a switch to make it hit one person?
Yeah, sacrifice the few to save the many, whatever.
And Vash's answer is, fuck it, derail that train and save everybody on board. And, like, we don't usually have an anime that's willing to, like, it's, or even a TV show that's willing to be just, like, you know what, mega pacifism. Let's see how far pacifism can go as, like, a philosophy that holds it together. And so I'm really resistant to, like, Vash getting any thank you, because even if it's in the service of character development. But I mean, it's a valid interpretation, and it's the one I'd rather have, because I like it where, like, Vash is basically the Batman, where, like, like, Gotham will hate him if he ever fails, but he's the only person pulling the weight. That's awful. I feel so dirty. Vash is not Batman.
I feel like it's hard to even call it pacifism, though, because, I mean, he's taking action. He's trying to constantly, like, balance everything.
I mean, I don't know what to call, like, never let a single person die.
I think
if you can stop it.
It's like it's kind of balance, right? Like, he doesn't want either side to become uneven.
Yeah, because, no one dies.
Well,
like,
why don't he? In Vash's eyes, although maybe the movie failed and probably did fail to communicate this, in Vash's eyes, there is no side. There is just humanity, and nobody should die.
Yeah, that's actually probably.
Yeah, I'd actually. I mean, we're probably rounding down. So on this, but, like, I would recommend the show. It kind of, keep in mind that around episode 11 or 12, there's a really hard left turn into seriousness. But I think it's a show that asks questions that I don't always see asked in other ways. And Vash, at least, is a really interesting character with a lot of levels. And also, on a completely, like, surface level, it's got one of the best English dubs ever done. And it was really weird. Actually, I cut into the English dub every so often in the movie. And Funimation, bless their hearts, didn't hire back anybody except for Johnny Young Bosch. But everyone's doing an imitation of the original voice actors, like, like a caricature, like, mimicry, and it works kind of. It's got a fairly good dub, and although that's something that we're not supposed to care about as anime fans, like, it's worth pointing out that it's a show you can just throw on and have in the background. There's, like, a sweet superhuman feat of strength or determination from Vash every couple episodes, and it's fine as an episodic treat until it gets into the main plot, and by that point you'll know whether or not you've bought into it, so... I recommend Trigun still. It's aged a bit, but they all have. Cowboy Bebop's aged a bit, which bums me out to say.
After all you said about it, it's got me intrigued to watch it, especially if it can kind of wash the taste that this left out.
I think that it will. I think that the character of Vash is much better in the series than it is in the movie, even if I overall like the movie.
Yeah, I like Western stuff. I like a good Western, so.
Yeah, and you don't get many, like, Japanese Westerns.
Yeah.
Like, you get it kind of, the influences move the other way. Is that, like, Kurosawa is influencing, like, A Fistful of Dollars or Magnificent Seven, but you don't get much of, like, what's a Western look like to Japanese eyes?
Yeah.
Something like sukiyaki, Western dango, whatever. But yeah, I don't know. So last closing comments. We can wrap this up right now.
Yeah. What happened to Gasback's dice candy? You know, he was eating all that candy in the early bit, and then he just stopped doing it. Where'd it go?
He lost it. You saw how it was blowing through the wind because, like, he lost his last bit. That is one thing that I actually, like, literally have, like, a text here where I'm like, what is this dice motif? Because
yeah, I didn't get it either.
Because Vash keeps being like, I tossed a die, and the die, I'm like, Vash, you don't gamble.
Oh, yeah. Man, Gasback loved his fucking monologues about how great crime was, because it's just so fun and everybody should just do it for crime's sake because it's fun.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like Trigun, the anime always has these really half-baked villain philosophies where, like, I think the closest analog to Gasback is Brilliant Dynamite's Neon, who's this like giant dude who wears like a neon encrusted suit, like literally has like batteries on his shoulders to power this like neon tube lined suit that he wears. He's got these like sparkling guns that like shoot like diamond bullets, and he's just like this, and he's like, everything should be flashy, what's the point if it's not flashy? I'm gonna blow up the steamer because it's so flashy. And like all Trigun villains up until the Gung-Ho Guns, even the Gung-Ho Guns are kind of one-note-y. They have like a thing that they're about,
yeah,
except for like the rocket roller skate samurai gun dude who's kind of just like, fuck it, we couldn't think of someone. But like everyone's got like this really like one-sided caricatured philosophy, but I thought Gasback's was really weird, which is like, everyone takes from everyone, I'm just doing it the fun way. And then like, why are you hurting people? It's like, oh, I love to hurt people. It's no fun to rob if you don't hurt people.
It's like, I'm so bad. Look at me.
I didn't like Gasback.
I liked how I liked that though, because it was just so
over the top.
They didn't apologize. Yeah, they didn't apologize for it at all. It was just what it was, and they just went with it to the extreme. It was dumb, but it was fun.
That can be a little like spaghetti western in a way.
I mean, everyone in Trigun has like a stupid half-baked morality that they apply to, and I think the satisfaction of Trigun is finding out that like, oh, Vash's stupid half-baked morality is actually like runs really deep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you could like, you can argue whether or not it's stupid, but it's not half-baked. Like he's thought about this a long time, and so it works at like to have someone who's like, I will never kill anybody and I will never let anyone be killed, be versus someone who's like, everything's about taken. We're all robbing from each other, and it's just like, okay, whose philosophy? It's kind of the it's almost like the shonen thing of like, you have rival philosophies coming up against each other, and whoever wins the fight, their philosophy is obviously right. Like that was something I noticed really heavily in Rurouni Kenshin, where you have like the crazy bandages dude who I can't remember, and he's like got this thing about strength and power, and he sets up the situation where like by beating him, Kenshin proves him right, and by losing, Kenshin proves him right. And so you have this thing of like, well, how can Kenshin defeat him if by defeating him he's proving that like power is all that matters and power gives you the right to kill people, and like this is natural selection going on. And like, I like it in Trigun too, so
yeah. I guess they are kind of similar,
yeah, except Trigun's better. God, Kenshin drags badly after
definitely Kedork. Definitely true. Definitely true.
All right, well,
wait, one more thing. Remember the gag with the Thomas meat? Why do they call it Thomas?
Oh, that's just their beast of burden is a Thomas.
Yeah, I know that, but it's a weird name because it's a name.
Yeah, anyway. It's a name, and also they're their horses, and so it's like they ride the horses and they eat the horses, and also like the horses like gets, you can like dry it to like really ugly looking jerky that,
yeah, and it's like impossible to cut, and there's like, yeah, that comes up three times with that guy, and then with I don't remember the second time, but then also it saves Vash's life.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just keeps him getting shot. I just like that repeating gag. It was dumb. It was terrible. Yeah. It made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the movie is the strongest with its like little stuff, like the background gags and like the quick cut stuff and
Cannonball guy.
Cannonball. There's also the guy that I noticed was the guy when he's coming up to the gate of the mansion, and there's a guy who's like has like a seam on his face and has like half black and half white,
and then like, it's reverse on his torso or on his arms. It's so good.
Oh, I missed
like
that.
What
it's like, what do you like, how did that come about?
Yeah,
because you're not like Two-Face, you're like double Two-Face. So you just watched Badlands Rumble for like the weird people with the stuff going on,
or don't
or watch the anime and then they watch the series and get really disappointed by Badlands Rumble, or don't.
You know, it sounds like it'll be better if you've seen the series because
I mean it's better because you can see like the remnants of the series' philosophy in the show, but it's definitely. Can I stop the podcast now, Twig?
Wait, one more thing. No, I'm fine. I'm
Bomb Guy.
Okay. Well, this has been the Bomb Guy podcast. Thank you for joining us on this bomb hour of this bomb day. And we will see you in a bit. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Yep. Ah, I did it. I feel terrible. I just
End
did
it.
That.
End it.
Was that? I remember he posted all the waveforms and I felt guilty, but I don't remember.
Yeah, so I'm getting a little bit of that some of the time.
Interesting. Well, luckily for you, well, he knows how to fix it.
yeah. He's right. Gonna listen to this and be like, fuck you guys.